Great. So this is it. The swan song. I'm out of here. I'm out of here. Well, it's been great being here, and I think I don't have the exact dates, but I think on next Thursday or Thursday after that, I start a big book study up in Deerfield Beach somewhere, 7:30, and I think maybe next Tuesday or the Tuesday thereafter, I'll be doing the Unity, the 12 Steps at the Unity Church in Pompano. You know, Rachel and James's thing, if y'all have ever been there. So it's somewhere all over the place. But if you're on my email list, you'll get the information as to what's happening with that deal. So it is good to be here. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group. I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. Grateful for that. And tonight we're going to be on step 12 or whatever. You know, we'll see how that goes. I've been accused, and rightly so, of masquerading my, you know, basically 12 weeks of the third step, you know. And I usually mention something about the step we're supposed to be on during the last 3 minutes, so stick around. I'm going to talk a little bit about 12 step because obviously it's a big deal to me. I'm involved in a lot. I've been involved with it for years, and I've actually had somebody, you know, I never really planned these things, not that you wouldn't guess that, but always, what always seems to happen is before I'm going to speak, somebody comes up to me and starts talking to me about something which is apropos of whatever I'm going to be talking about. I actually had a request from an email from somebody in California to, you know, talk about a particular testimony that I give, which may or may not have anything to do with 12 step, but I think I am going to tell you about it because I don't think I've told this group, and I haven't spoken about it in a long time, and I think it carries a pretty neat message. So I'll talk a little bit about that. I've had three sponsors. My first sponsor was Bob Sullivan. My second sponsor was Joe Snyder. And I've had wonderful mentors like Ray O'Keefe, and my third sponsor now is Sean Glenn. And all my sponsors have been intensely involved in service to other people. And I mean, that's just the way it is. Most of the stuff that I do, and as you all know, if you've been here for 12 weeks, I'm not going to go into drunk logs. I'm not going into the drinking thing or any of that stuff. Nothing wrong with that. It's good to do it. What I really try to focus on is emotional sobriety, what Bill Wilson refers to as the next frontier. You know, he says the real problem is, you know, unhealthy dependencies. And what I'm more interested in is permanent realization of the promises in your life. I'm not interested in guys with, you know, 25 years who are thumb-sucking crybabies or living lives of quiet desperation or, you know, slipping or sliding or any of that stuff. I'm interested in what the guys between 1935 and 1939 had. I have that sort of like program. I'm focused on that. I'm focused on Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. So I hope you all who have been following this maybe got that book, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, which focuses on what the program was between 1935 and 1939. And I dare you to read that book. You know, we read a book called, our basic text is called Alcoholics Anonymous. It was published in 1939. As you know, in that book it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. They had a path. It's not, you know, and here you have a tendency to hear people say, well, you work your program, I work my program. There's only one program. There's not 15 different programs. There's only one program. And the bottom line is, and that program was pretty much spelled out, that's why they used the word thoroughly. That's why they used the word thoroughly, followed our path. That's why they used the word painstaking. People try to understand, say, well, how come I'm not realizing the promises? Where I'm realizing the promises, like on Wednesday and Thursday, I'm sucking on the barrel of a gun. You know, that's how you get the promises. You know, you're rocketing in the fourth dimension of existence, you realize the promises, and then 5 minutes later, you want to kill yourself. You know, they come, they go, they're backwards, they're forwards. You're 15 years sober, you're 3 years sober, you're 5 years sober, and you still got that incredible fear, Does it ever get okay? In a permanent fashion. Not that everybody gets perfect, and I would never espouse to that. You know, how does that thing happen, and how does the 12-step figure into that? So I want to tell a few stories and talk a little bit about that and read some stuff out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. But the point is, when they said, rarely have a seen person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, if you really want to know what the path is, they followed. Once you get past the 2 years, the 4 years, the 5 years, the 7 years, the 10 years, and, you know, they used to have a commercial, smoking more but enjoying it less. Once you get to that plateau, that place where you sort of feel comfortable with, you're not drinking, you're not worrying about drinking, but somehow, some way, you knew there's something more. You know there's something more. You know there's something you haven't got, but you don't seem to be able to break that barrier and move forward. You might be interested in reading Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers and find out what the real deal is. Because the path they walked had very little to do with the big book. I mean, it had a lot to do with the big book in the sense that it sort of summarized it. But if you want to know the specific things, what they were doing between 1935 and 1939, you want to read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. You know, that Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers is the book where they said that the books that they found absolutely essential, was 1 Corinthians 13, Sermon on the Mount, and the book of James. We're almost called the James Club. That's how important the book of James was. They studied those books. They studied the book of Luke and things like that. They were very into Bible study and stuff like that. And as I said to other people, you know, it says in the big book, when they wrote this in 1939, we've been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence and we've experienced much of heaven. That's what it's, you know, either these guys are lying about this stuff, and if they are, we're like fools to follow. We're fools to come in here if they're lying about this stuff, or they're telling the truth about what was happening. And if they're telling the truth, you got to be crazy not to want this deal, what they were having. And what did they say they had? You know, I'll just read you some of the things they said they had going for them. Let's look on There Is a Solution. If I could find There Is a Solution. There it is right here. This is what they say. They said the great fact is just this, and nothing less. It says, we have found much of heaven, and we have been rocking in the fourth dimension of existence. So if you have not found much of heaven, and you haven't been rocking in the fourth dimension of existence, it just doesn't happen to you. There's nothing wrong with being sober. There's nothing wrong with being here. I'm not putting you down. You know, I'm not making fun of you or anything. I'm just telling you, that's what they said happened to them. And I don't think they were talking about not drinking. They handled the not drinking thing when they said we are over 100 men and women who have recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. That's the hopeless state of mind and body is what I had and what you had when you wake up in the morning and say, I'm not going to have a drink today, and by 5 o'clock you were drinking. And you woke up the next day and you said, I'm not going to go to the bar today, and by 5 o'clock you were in the bar. Or you woke up the next day and said, I'm not going to buy booze today, and by 5 o'clock you were searching for dimes, nickels, and quarters, so you got $2.89. Get yourself to the Winn-Dixie so you can get a quart bottle of Carlos Rossi Chianti and sit around by the LP record and play A Pirate Looks at 40 or Only the Lonely, you know, or Rainy Days and Mondays while you're drinking that shit, thinking about all the gals that left you and all that sort of stuff, and you do it over and over. You know, that the thing they're talking about, a hopeless state of mind and body, is when you're drinking against your will. And I'll tell you, I don't know whether you guys have the same disease I have. I mean, y'all say you're alcoholics, it's a closed meeting, but if you have the disease I have, you find yourself in a situation like I did when I was 31 years old, where I was drinking against my will. That's when you decide you're not going to drink, and you drink anyway. And you decide you're not going to drink, and you drink anyway. And you drink, and finally you go like you say, what's the use? I'm never going to be able to stop drinking. You can't envision life without, with, and still drink alcohol, you can't envision life. Without alcohol, your life turns into a bottle. You may have a million problems, but the bottom line is it's just bottle after bottle, drink after drink. It's all about the booze. That's a hopeless state of mind and body. You know, the forward, what it says is we have recovered. I don't know about you, I've recovered from that deal. I'm not recovering from that deal, I've recovered from that deal. Just like they, I've recovered from that deal. Doesn't mean I can, hey, listen, I can be drunk in an hour. Because I'm powerless. I'm powerless over it. I know that. I have no power. I could never say, I have never said, nor will I ever say I'll never drink again. Because I don't have the power to say I'll never drink again. All I can tell you is I recovered from that hopeless state of mind and body. That deal where by 5 o'clock I was drinking, even though I said, well, I recovered that hopeless state of mind and body, but my recovery from that hopeless state of mind and body, as my recovery from the other things that drag us down, those old ideas and things like that, have little to do with my own power, because where am I going to get the power? It says there is one who has all power, that one is God. It doesn't say Russell has 1%. It says God has all that thing. And so I have developed that deal, which we need in order to escape the gravitational pull of this disease in all aspects of our life, and that deal is a relationship with God, and that's what this book is all about. It's not about the steps, although the steps are something we do as exercises. It's not about that stuff. It's about a relationship with God. All through the book it says, see to it your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. That's what it says. That's what it talks about. So what I want is, I want, when they say we have found much of heaven, we've been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed, that's the deal I want. Whatever that is, I want that deal. The great fact is just this and nothing less. Nothing less than this, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today, central fact, number one fact, only fact, most important fact, it's not getting laid, guys. It's not the car, it's not the gal, it's not the guy, it's not the money, it's not the prestige, it's not any of the stuff that you hear at closed discussion meetings. That thing about people, places, and things. Not about that deal. It's not about your feelings. It's not about you being depressed or not depressed. It's not about any of that crap. The central fact of their lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. Absolute certainty. They were certain of that. They focused on that. Their whole life was about that. Their relationship with God was about that. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves, which is exactly repeated in the promises. When they go through all the promises, it says He is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. Of course, quickly, when they say sometimes quickly, they're not talking about the quickly. When we think about quickly, I don't know about you, but when I think about quickly, I think of this, whack. Quickly in Alcoholics Anonymous terms is 20 years. Quickly in AA terms is 20 years. If you got 15 years and you're still nuts, you're doing just fine. You know? All of a sudden you wake up at 25 years, 28 years. I'm sorry to report this. You woke up 25 years, 35, 28 years, whatever it is. And you realize that you ain't just worried about any of this shit anymore. And you don't even know when it left you or where it left you, because all you know is that 15 years you were saying, when is this crap going to stop, this hand-to-hand combat with the bullshit? When is the loneliness going to go away? When is the worry going to go away? When is the anxiety go away? When am I going to seriously experience these promises on a day-by-day, hour-to-hour basis? I've been doing this crap for 15 years and I'm still a whack job. You know, you go up to the guy in the room. You got 15 years, you got 16 years, you got 17 years, whatever the hell you got. You're working the program, you're sponsoring people. You look him in the eye. He's going nuts. You say, let me tell you something. You're as sincere as you can possibly be because you tell him the truth. You know, his wife left him, you know, the boss fired him, whatever it is. And you look him in the eye and you say, let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. I know this sounds crazy, but if you just don't drink and you go to meetings, and you read that big book, and you work these tests, it's all going to be okay for you. And he looks at you, and he says, because he knows you're being honest and sincere, he says, it's all, you mean it? I said, I'm telling you, it's going to be, you're not even telling him how it's going to be okay. You just tell him, it's going to all work out. And he looks at you, he says, really? He says, absolutely. He says, thanks a lot. Because he believes you, because he has faith in you. And then you get in your car and drive 3 blocks away, and you say, when the hell is it going to work out? When the hell is it going to be okay for you, Russell? When's it going to work out for you? Because you're still struggling yourself with your own crap. And you're trying to figure out, when is this stuff going to go away permanently? And maybe it never goes away absolutely permanently, but it can get pretty damn good. And you really want to get to that point where it gets pretty damn good. Where it gets like this thing, you've been rocking in the fourth dimension of existence. And part and parcel of that, although not the whole thing, has to do with working the 12th step. Has to do with service to others. You know, there are leaders in AA. Did you know that there are leaders? How many people know that there are leaders? I know there are, because in the traditions it says there are leaders. You know how you can recognize the leaders? They're servants. The leaders are the servants. You got the whiners. You got the suckers. You know, you got the people that are, when I'm saying they're sucking the life, you got the people that are coming here to get, want, need. You know, all you got those people that come in here, and I'm not putting that down. You know, everybody's entitled to do that. I mean, you know, I guess for a year or two or three or four or five, how long do you get to do that? And then you got, you know, I mean, there are some people at 20 years they're still doing that crap. They still think this is group therapy. 20 years, they still think what this is all about, what A is all about, is some sort of group therapy. You come in here and you vomit over everybody and you express your feelings, you know, and vomit over people, and you think that's what it's all about. You know, and they're not drinking, but they might as well be using this as the bar. And then you have some other people in here. They call them the leaders, and you can recognize them because they're servants. It's not about get. It's not about vomiting over people. It's not about any of that. It's just coming here. And you know something? The impetus I had to come here during the first 5, 10, 15 years, because I needed a meeting. There's nothing wrong with needing a meeting. There's nothing wrong with needing a meeting because I needed a meeting because of something that happened out there. The impetus to come here now because of a desire to try to help somebody else. Because maybe there's somebody that needs help. The impetus to help other people is just as strong, if not stronger. A stronger reason for being here than when I first came in here because I needed a meeting because I was going to blow my brains out. And somehow, some way, I believe that you can tell whether somebody is got this thing by how strong his desire is to help other people and to serve other people. And if you read what they say in the big book, they essentially say that. When they talk about some of the promises, they don't only talk about the promises on page 80, let's go to 80, what is it, 83? If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom, a new happiness. Brand new stuff, stuff you never experienced before. We will not regret the past or wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace, whatever that is. No matter how far down the scale we've gone, we'll see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. I don't know about you guys, but I was a self-pityaholic before I came in here. I've been a self-pityaholic all my life. Anything that happened around me was a good reason for feeling sorry for myself. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest. How about this? We will lose interest in selfish things, gain interest in our fellows. We will lose interest in selfish things. We will lose interest in selfish things. You ever read this stuff and try to figure out what this means? We will lose interest. That's a big deal. In selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. You know what they're saying? Just stop thinking about yourself. You'll stop thinking about yourself. You won't think about yourself. You'll start thinking, what you'll be thinking about is how you can serve other people. What would that life be like? You know? You know what it's like to obsessively think about yourself? You ever experience that? You ever experience worry? You ever experience waking up at 3, 4 o'clock in the morning early, thinking about yourself, thinking about your day, thinking about what's happening? You ever get in the car worrying about stuff? You ever drive around worrying about stuff? You ever notice that you're worrying about the same thing over and over again? That you're thinking the same thoughts all over and over again? You ever come to realize that there are always thoughts about yourself? They all have something to do with you, some sort of fear, some sort of anxiety. You ever try to stop that shit? You can't stop it, can you? You turn on TV, maybe you watch some porn or something like that. Maybe you can go to a meeting for half an hour, you know, or an hour, and you know, you break the cycle, and then you get back in your car and the bullshit comes back again. And you got 10 years, you got 15 years, and you can't stop thinking about yourself. All you do is worry about yourself, think about yourself. You come to an AA meeting, some guy like me starts talking about this crap, you say, you know, ain't no way that's possible. When's that going to happen? Well, this is what they say. I'm telling you, this is either all bullshit, or they're telling the truth. You know, if they're telling the truth, if this is the truth and you don't have it, I'll tell you what, if you want what we have, you're willing to go to anything. If I was you, I'd want to have this stuff. Maybe you don't have it because maybe you're not being painstaking. You know, alcoholics want to buy things on the cheap. They want to do the steps. Well, why don't I have it? I'm doing the steps. Are you painstaking? Are you thorough? Whatever that means. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity, I'll tell you what would be a good thing to do. If I had 10 years or 15 years of sobriety and I didn't have this thing going for me in my life, you know, I would want to go back to Dr. Bob and the good old times and see see exactly what they were doing. Maybe there was stuff they were doing that I'm not doing now. You know, I remember saying to my sponsor when I was 4 months sober, you know, I was doing great up to 4 months or 3 months. I had stopped drinking. I started feeling better myself. I was on that pink cloud, whatever that thing is. And then the day came where I don't know what happened. I think I got an FPNL bill or something. You know, I mean, I said, I got a bill. I got a bill. I got a water bill. I said, holy shit, I paid this last month. You know, all of a sudden I realized that these bills kept on coming no matter what. Life kept on going no matter what. You know, it was this day. All of a sudden I was sober, but I was still getting bills. I was still getting the electric bill. I still had to pay the bills, you know what I mean? And all of a sudden I realized I was having a, and I turned to my sponsor, I said, it's not working. You know, and I think he said to me, he said, he looked at me and says, well, you know, Russ, he says, this is what I said, because this is what alcoholics say, because alcoholics rationalize. They tell themselves to rationalize. We bullshit ourselves. It's not working. You always have to have somebody to blame, right? It's not working. AA's not working. It's not me. It has nothing to do with me. It's not my fault. I'm just a victim. I'm just one of these. It's meaning AA, is not working for me. It's not my fault. So he says to me, he says, well, Russell, you must be one of the rare ones. You know, I was sponsored by these guys. You know how much they love me. You know, how much they abused me. They said, you must be one of the rare ones. I said, one of the rare ones? He says, yeah, you're obviously one of the rare ones. I said, one of the rare ones? He says, yes, you're obviously one of the rare ones. I said, well, which sort of like thought, I kept on, I was telling him for 4 months that I was unique. I was explaining to him, every other word was, I was a yes butter, an if onlyer, and a you don't understand her. He was finally coming around to my point of view. I was telling him I was different. I was telling him I was unique. And finally, thank God, he realized it wasn't working for me. He said, you must be one of the rare ones. And I said, the rare ones? He said, the rare ones. I said, what's that? He says, well, they talk about it at every meeting. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, you've been going to meetings, haven't you? I said, well, yeah. He says, well, they talk about them at every meeting. I said, I never heard him talk about it. He says, absolutely. Every meeting you've been to, they talk about them. I said, I never heard him. He says, every meeting you've been to, they talk about the rare ones. I said, I've never heard him talk about the rare ones. He says, don't they say, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path? So I said, yeah. I said, well, you just told me you're doing everything, right? You're thoroughly following the path. You're doing everything. And it's not working for you. So you're obviously one of the rare ones, one of the guys that has thoroughly followed the path, and it's not working for you. So AA just doesn't work for you. You might as well leave. You need to leave AA because you've done everything you're supposed to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's not working. And I sat there like a deer in headlights. I felt like I lost my best friend. This is the only thing that had ever worked for me. And he looked at me and he said, and after he let me think about that for a while, he said, listen, you don't have to leave, but don't tell me you're doing everything and it's not working for you. I want to know what you're not doing. He says, well, I'm doing everything. I said, what about your fourth step? Oh, that. Well, I'm working on it, you know? Well, let me tell you something about thoroughly following the path and painstaking and all that stuff. Are you doing everything? Have you done everything? Are you thoroughly doing this? You know? I mean, I don't know. Do you have a sponsor? You know, or are you one of these guys that you just sort of go to your sponsor, you either don't have a sponsor, you sponsor yourself, or are you one of these guys that just sort of pick one of them sponsors that sort of co-sign your horse shit? You know, do you have one of these sponsors that every time you talk to them that makes you feel good? You just feel better every time he talks to you? You have one of them guys, you know, they don't tell you you're full of shit. They don't say things like, why don't you go out and drink? You know, you have one of those deals, one of those guys, they want you to like them. They want to be your friend. You know, they want to love on you and stuff like that. So here we go on this one. That's the promises. Well, how about this? They say it even differently right over here. They say, when we sincerely took such a, same thing, page 63, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. The position of trusting in God and having a relationship with God. You know, right before this is one, this is the how and why, but first we had to quit playing God. We had to get rid of the selfishness. We must or it kills us. God makes that possible. But when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer being all-powerful. Being all-powerful. They say a lot of things about God here. They sort of map him out for you. He's not a higher power. He's the highest power. You may be satisfied with a higher power. I need the highest power because I wouldn't want to have crap coming along that's, you know, higher than my higher power. I need the highest power. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. That's the proposition. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. You get this? He'll give you everything you need if you keep close to him and perform his work well, which means you pretty much better know who he is. Don't you think? I mean, is that true? Unless it's bullshit, let's just rip this page out. Because, you know, this is the program, but why don't you just do your program? Why don't you just do your program? See how that works. This is the program. Be provided what you'll need if you keep close to him. I guess you got to know who he is and perform his work well. I guess you got to figure out not only when you're close to him, you got to figure out what his work is for you. Because there's some work mapped out for you. There's some servant stuff mapped out for you. There's some service stuff mapped out for you. Or maybe you're just one of these people that go to AA meetings and suck up whatever's going on in the AA meeting, call up your sponsor and whine and cry, and not really interested in doing work. You know, you're just sort of like sitting there on remote control. You figure what AA is, it's just some sort of program that you can go to make yourself feel better, because the only thing you're interested in is yourself. The only thing you're interested in is yourself. You've always only been interested in yourself. You only give a shit about yourself. You don't care about anybody else. And all you care about is yourself and your feelings. That's the only thing you think about. That's the only thing you've ever thought about. You got 5 years. You got 10 years. It's all about you. It's all about your feelings. And the only reason you go to AA is so that you can feel better. And maybe that's what you think AA is all about. Well, don't worry about it then. You know, that's fine, you know, because, it's, you know, the bottom line is nobody can tell you what to do. But the bottom line is don't expect to get what these guys got. Don't expect to get this stuff if you're not going to get to this deal. If you, it says your poems just work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves. There it is again. Same thing they said in the promises. Less interested in ourselves. We became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more we became interested in seeing what we can contribute to life as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence. Apparently, whoever he is, you become conscious of his presence all the time. We began, if you're conscious of his presence, you begin to lose fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter, you're reborn. I'm just reading from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, don't blame me, I'm just a messenger. That's what this deal is all about. It has all this stuff in here. And Bill Wilson says, I don't know, somewhere in here in Bill's story, it says something like this. In talking about 12-step work or whatever you want to call it, it says, my wife and I abandoned ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution of their problems. Abandon ourselves with enthusiasm. I mean, I'll tell you what, I don't know, but I was talking to a guy who I admired very much in AA. He had about 30 years from California, and he's a circuit speaker. And I asked him, I said, I wonder if it's possible if I can call you up sometime. And he said, you can call me up anytime you want, Russ. My number's in the book. I said, your number's in the book. I felt sure his number wouldn't be in the book. It'd be unlisted because he's known throughout the United States. He says, my number's in the book. Just look me up in the book under this deal and call me up anytime. And this is what he said to me. He says, I don't know what fellowship you're in, but I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. This was 30 years ago he told me this. I was 3 years sober. I was banquet chairman for the intergroup banquet. And that year, and I brought him down to speak, and I spent the weekend with him. And he's like one of these Eskimos, you know, like Bob Earl talks about, that changed my life because I got to hang around with him. Got to see the way he was and the way he thought and the way, just the way he was with people and with himself. And I wanted what he had. I said, can I call you? And he looked at me and he said this. He did what my sponsors used to do. I don't know what, I guess old timers take glee in sort of like torturing new guys. He said, Russell, I don't know. He gave me a little shot, you know? He said, Russell, I don't know what fellowship you're in, but I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm available. I have a sponsor who said to me, says, anybody ask you to say, to do something A, you always say yes. Now I've since learned there are reasons why you could say no, you know, but he knew that if you're an alcoholic, you're an excuse-aholic. You do have every excuse in the world, but he knew that for me, I didn't know what a valid excuse was or not. He says, you say yes when somebody asks you. They ask you to clean up. They ask you to chair the meeting. They ask you, always say yes. Because for me, fear is a good reason to say no. I'm not ready is a good reason. Fear, being uncomfortable, being lazy. I can think of so many reasons why to say no. He said, you always say yes. My wife and I abandoned ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution of their problems. It was fortunate for my own old business associates remained skeptical for a year and a half, during which I found little work. I was not too well at the time, and I was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. Anybody here, you know, don't have to raise your hand, have a problem with employment, have a problem with money, have a problem getting a job, or within 18 months, you're sober for 18 months or less, you have a problem doing that stuff, you're plagued by waves of self-pity, you feel sorry for yourself. You think, anybody here, don't raise your hand. You got less than 18 months, you're into that deal. Maybe you got more than 18 months, you're into that deal. This is what Bill Wilson said. I was fortunate for my old business associates to remain skeptical for a year and a half, during which I found little work. No work, no money. I was not too well at the time and was plagued by waves of self-pitying resentment. This sometimes nearly drove me back to drink. But I soon found that when all measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. Many times, I've gone to my old hospital in despair. On talking to a man there, I would be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet. It's a design for living that works in rough going. When we get to working with others, well, you know, working with others, it says, is nothing has ensured, you know, continued sobriety than intensive work with other alcoholics. In working with others, one of the things it says is this. When you get to working with others, it says this. Never avoid these responsibilities, but be sure you are doing the right thing if you assume them. Helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. You got 2 years, you got 3 years, you got 5 years, you got 10 years, whatever the hell you got, you come up to me with some sort of problem. You say, will you be my sponsor? I've got a problem, can I talk to you about it? You go the blah, 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 the blah, 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 the blah, 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 the this, that, and the other thing. I don't really give a shit what it is. I look at you. I'm not really even listening, you know, because why would I listen to that horseshit? You know what I mean? I just look at you and I say one thing. How many people do you sponsor? How many people do you sponsor? You tell me I don't sponsor anybody, you should be ashamed of yourself. You deserve to feel crappy. This program gives you what it gives you. It gives you sobriety. You're supposed to be dead and you get sobriety and you're not sponsoring. You're not helping other people. I don't want to hear nobody ask you. I know why nobody's asking you, because you're not out there showing that you want to do it. You're not talking at meetings. You're sitting in the back and judging other people. You're sucking up everything you can get in the meetings. You're not talking. You're not sharing. You're not active. You're not doing you're not doing the servant thing. You're not cleaning up. You're not behind the bar. You're not out there ready, willing. You know, this is the stuff that will decide whether or not you're going to be one of the men or one of the boys. This will decide whether you're just a dilettante fooling around this thing or you're the real deal. You understand what I'm saying? Listen, nobody's asking you to sponsor you. Listen, they come in here, they're dumb as sheep. You know what I mean? You go up to them and you tell them you're sponsoring them. You tell them that's the way we do it in AA. I'm now your temporary sponsor. You know, that's the deal. It's your life. You go. You don't just wait around for somebody to sort of discover you in the back of the room hiding out, you know, trying to get out the door as quickly as possible so nobody will ask you a question. You go up and ask them. You raise your hand every time in meetings. Don't be coming up to me with 5 years or 6 years sober and telling me how all the problems you have and then telling me you don't sponsor anybody. Or sponsoring, tell me you sponsor three people that they don't talk to you. They never call you. Well, of course they don't call you. If you only sponsor three people, you'll never have anybody calling you. You got to sponsor 23 people. You know, don't tell me there's a limit to how many people. Listen, I don't know what fellowship you're in. I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm available. Somebody asked me to sponsor them, I say yes. It's up to them. Let me tell you something. The way this thing works, if 10 people ask you to sponsor you, three will actually call you up. You know, you understand what I'm talking about? And of the three that will call you up and you tell them, meet me at this meeting or do something like that, only one is going to come anyway. You got to sponsor a lot of people to work with one and two that are going to last. I mean, that's just the way it is in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, don't be worried about whether they're laughing at you, they're looking at you funny. I mean, this guy, Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob, they were running down to hospitals. They were looking for these guys. They had feelers out. They had nurses calling them up. They were looking for people to help. And you guys, they're brought to you like Domino's Pizza. And you're sitting around with 5 years not sponsoring people, worrying about while you're always thinking about yourself and worrying about yourself. Man, I want to have at least one guy call me up every week who's committing suicide. You know, it takes your mind off of things, you know what I mean? Never avoid this responsibility, but sure you are doing the right thing if you assume them. Helping others is the foundation stone of recovery. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. Listen to me. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. Does anybody get that?
Yes.
I know you guys have read the book Alcoholics Anonymous, but let me ask this. Have you actually read the book Alcoholics Anonymous? No. I mean, I know you've all read the book Alcoholics Anonymous, but have you read the book Alcoholics Anonymous? Do you know what it actually says? Do you appreciate what it actually says? I mean, I don't know, maybe you don't want this thing. maybe you just want to play the game, you know, and, you know, get to go to the meetings, and you'll never get into the fellowship of the Spirit. You'll be in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. The desire to stop drinking is all you need, and you can just be one of these guys. You're like in the not drinking club. You'll just never experience what they experience. Helping others is a foundation stone. A kindly act once in a while, it just ain't enough. You have to act the good Samaritan every day. You have to act the good, you got to be the good Arab every day. What the hell is that all about? Well, you're going to have to read the book of Luke. Well, you're only going to do that if you're serious. That's where they got that from, the good Samaritan. What are they talking about, a good Samaritan? Capital G, capital S. Well, you'd have to read the book of Luke and see what the proverb of, you'd have to see when they talk about the good Samaritan and what that's all about. You know, if you're interested, but maybe you're too lazy to do that. Or maybe you don't like religious stuff. Oh, but you're in Alcoholics Anonymous, aren't you? You know, you got to decide, are you in Well People's Anonymous, you know, the fellowship, or are you in Alcoholics? If you're in Alcoholics Anonymous, then read the same book I am. The book I read, I don't know what book you read, says we lose all prejudice against organized religion. Isn't that what, I don't know, is that what it says in the book? We lose all prejudice. Does it say that in the book? We lose all prejudice against organized religion? We begin to see where some religious people are right, where it's worth it. Isn't that what Alcoholics Anonymous says? Because if you hung around the A rooms, you think anything religious is something that you can avoid. When these guys stayed sober for 4 years, 5 years, and for 10 years after that, reading the Bible and reading religious things while you guys are running away with it from it, because you don't really want to do this thing thoroughly. You don't want to be painstaking. Because some bozo in this room that's not going to stay sober anyway, you know, and is still living a life of quiet desperation is laughing at you or saying we don't want to hear that crap, and you're so scared of what he thinks about you and what everybody else thinks about you, you're just going along with these bozos instead of wanting the real stuff. You want to mind the real stuff, doing what they were actually doing. What's plainly in front of you, right here, what they're talking about, you don't want to do that because you don't want anybody laughing at you. And you wonder why you feel the way you do? A kindly act once in a while is enough. You have to act a good Samaritan every day if need be. It may mean the loss of many nights' sleep. I'm sure this is happening to all of you here. It may mean the loss of many nights' sleep, great interference with your pleasures, interruption of your business. It may mean sharing your money on your home, counseling frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips, that means many trips, to police courts, sanitariums, hospitals, jails, and asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time of the day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. Ah, my wife always says that. A drunk may smash the furniture in your home or burn a mattress. You may have a fight with him if he is violent. Sometimes you will have to call a doctor and administer sedatives on these directions. Another time you may have to send for the police or an ambulance. Occasionally you will have to meet such conditions. All this stuff. You know, listen, you know, I hesitate to say, you know, give my own personal testimony. Nothing I've ever done that is anything close to this was my idea. I was always pushed into it by a malevolent sponsor. You know, when I was on the relay for eight years in Dade County, between the hours of 11 o'clock p.m. and 8 a.m. in the morning, if you called up AA, you got me. 3 o'clock in the morning, you got me. That's why nobody got sober during the 8-year period of time. I had some interesting phone calls. You learn a lot about alcoholism, working with alcoholics. Some guy calls me up from Connecticut. He says, I'm here on 43rd Street. You know, I'm drunk. I need somebody to pick me up and take me to DSOC. I said, I'm sorry, you must have mistaken us for a yellow cab. I said, here's the address. Just start working. You'll get there by sunrise. He says, what is your name? What is your name? That's not the way we do it in Connecticut. Why, my name's Russell. Russell what? He says, just tell him Russell. You know, don't know who you're talking about. And I say, you're not going to report me, are you? I wouldn't want to lose this job. Some gal calls me up with a PhD, says, I got a PhD, I got this, I went to treatment, everything, I've been dry for 2 years, I got a daughter, and I started drinking again, and I need help. But the one thing I don't want to do is don't talk to me about Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, lady, I don't know what to tell you. I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sober 7 years because of going to Alcoholics Anonymous. You called up the Alcoholics Anonymous. I know you got a PhD, but you called up the Alcoholics Anonymous hotline. You say to me you're worried about drinking and losing your PhD and losing your daughter, but you don't want to talk about Alcoholics Anonymous. Let me tell you something. That's a non-starter with me. I don't know of any other way. That's how I stay. So how are you going to have these conversations with people? How are you going to talk to people? How are you going to have this great fun at 3 o'clock in the morning? You understand what I'm saying? Trying to help other alcoholics and get the blessings that this thing gets when you can put your head on the pillow and say, I helped somebody tonight, or I did service or something like that, unless you get involved in this stuff. Unless you get involved in sharing the intergroup banquet or going doing the stuff they do or sponsoring people. I mean, I feel sorry for people that aren't doing the stuff that we can be doing in here and just trying to use this as some sort of psychologist's couch, you know, some sort of group therapy thing or some sort of bar. I mean, I used to do this in bars, go to bars and sit around and drink booze and talk about my problems. What's the difference if you do the same thing? You just use coffee instead. And make believe you're an Alcoholics Anonymous. When you're just as selfish and self-centered as you've always been, and all you are is just dry and not drinking and thinking about yourself and only caring about your feelings. You got to excuse me. I apologize. I was so abused when I first came in here, you know, by abusive sponsors that I guess I became one. I'll give you an idea of how bad it was for me. I was 7 years sober, and I went to I was going through a bad situation. You ever go through something that's bad, that's really troubling you? I mean troubling you for like days and weeks. You know, something that's happened in your life. And there was something that had happened in my life having to do with a person, a situation that was killing me. I go to sleep thinking about this. You know, alcoholics tend to obsess on shit. Did you know that? They do. They do. It's true. They obsess on shit. You know, they obsess on stuff, you know? And I had done all the steps, and I was doing meetings, you know what I mean? And I was doing, I had 7 years, and I kept on thinking about this person. I wake up thinking about this person. I go to sleep thinking about this person, you know? Every day I'd be thinking about this person. It'd be on the back of my mind. Even when I was doing work, it would be somehow in the back, like music, like in an elevator, like music, this person. And it was all about what's going to happen to me, what are they going to think of me, about me, what if this happens, what if that happens. Just absolutely petrified. Something's going to happen to you, and you know if you're an alcoholic, you know it's going to be death. You know it's going to be the worst possible thing. You know it's going to be the most humiliating thing, and you can't talk to anybody about it because nobody will understand. Because you got 7 years, and you know, nobody will understand. You got all that false pride and all that bullshit going. And so I went to a retreat. There was a retreat, spiritual retreat, being done by Father Al Grau, may rest his soul. He was a Jesuit priest. He had like 35 years. I had like 7 years. He had 35 years. And I went to this spiritual retreat, and so I'm at this retreat, and here's this guy. Let me tell you about Father Al Grau. He was a Jesuit priest. If you know anything about Jesuits, he had a PhD in psychology. Sober 35 years. A war hero. One of the only survivors of the Thousand Mile March to Bataan or something, whatever it is, the Thousand Mile March. He was a POW of the Japanese, tortured, unbelievable. And he ran the Palm Beach Institute, you know, for alcohol and drugs. And this guy was like, this was it. I mean, Jesus may not have been around, but he was there. And he was like the closest thing to this deal with a PhD and very intelligent. And he was doing the thing. And I just sort of knew. I knew. Here's a guy, Jesuit priest. No, I'm not Catholic. Jesuit priest, right? PhD in psychology. Run the Palm Beach Institute. War veteran. Been through, you know, all sorts of torture and everything in turmoil. 35 years sober. This is the guy. If I can get in front of this guy and tell him what's going on, this is the guy that's going to fix me. This guy is going to fix me. And he's out there. You know what he's doing? He's doing service. He's talking to people. I don't know how many people have gone to retreats here. At the end of an AA retreat or a spiritual retreat, sometimes what they do, and what they did in this retreat, is they put a list on the board, and the guy who's the retreat master says, you can put your name on the list, and you can go in, and you can talk to the guy. You can talk to Father Al. You can have, he'll set aside an hour with you. Or something like that. So I wrote my name on the list. I mean, I've been saving up with this. I mean, I'm saving up with it. I mean, I'll tell you, I was ready to go in there and take a real dump on this guy. You know what I mean? I'm ready. I'm going to do this deal. This is going to be my salvation. And so I go in, and he says, hi, how are you? My name's Russell. And he says, doctors, I said, I got to tell you this. He says, okay, my son. He says, go ahead and start talking to me. And I start sort of explaining it to him. And I'm like going wild, you know, I'm like dumb, I'm like, it's like a discussion, I'm like, and I'm going, and he says, I'm 3 minutes into a 20-minute dialogue, you know what I mean? And he holds his hand down, he says, stop. I said, what? He says, I'm not the guy. He says, what do you mean? He says, I'm not the guy. I'm not the guy to hear this. I said, well, I'm an alcoholic. You understand? I'm an alcoholic. I said, no, you're the guy. He says, no, I am, trust me, I am not the guy to hear this. I said, no, you are the guy. You're the guy. You're the guy. You're the guy to hear this. He says, no, no, I'm the wrong guy to hear this. Imagine this confession, you know what I mean? He's a priest, for God's sakes, you know? I'm the wrong guy to talk about this. I said, no, no. I said, listen, I was gonna strangle this guy. You're gonna listen to this. You ever deal with alcoholics? You know, when I used to take the relay calls, they used to say something like this, just, you gotta listen to me. You gotta listen to me. And I'd say, no, I don't have to listen to you. You know, I mean, what do you mean? You know, my son, he says, you gotta, no, he says, I'm not the guy. He says, no, you are the guy. So finally, he sort of got, he says, okay, continue. So I told him the whole story. I told him the whole thing. And when I was done, he said, are you done? I said, yes, I'm done. He said, well, what do you think? And he says, you really want to know what I think? I said, yeah, I want to know what you think. That's what I'm here for. What do you think? He says, you want to know what I think? I said, yeah, I want to know what you think. He says, well, I'll tell you what I think. I think that you are full of shit. I'm not, what did the guy say about profanity? Listen, I'm just reporting the truth. This is the truth, you know what I mean? I'm just telling you the truth. I'm going in, dumping my heart out with a Jesuit priest, PhD in psychology. I don't know, I'm not Roman Catholic. I don't know anything about the Pope, what they're doing up there with confession. But, you know, I've watched the movies. Aren't they supposed to say things like, you know, do 15 Hail Marys, go in peace, my son, or whatever it is? I don't think they're supposed to say you're full of shit. You know, I'm ready to report this guy to the local, you know, ecclesiastical authorities or something like this, you know? He looks at me after I bare my soul, and he says, I think you're full of shit. And then he does a 15-minute tap dance on my brain, telling me specifically why I'm full of shit. Now I'm sitting there, I'm like a deer in headlights. I'm like in total shock. I'm not even hearing what he's saying. I got my mouth on, I'm like doing one of these things. I'm like, and he's like pounding me. He's like poking me. And this, you know, like I'm saying to you, you should be ashamed of you. He's like giving it to me, like pounding me. You're full of shit, and what about this, and what about that? And he's just giving me the whole thing. He had listened to everything. And he was telling me chapter and verse how full of shit I was. And then he did one of these numbers. I don't know, one of these AA priesty numbers. He says, okay, you understand? So he says, well, go in peace, my son. You know what I mean? And he just sort of showed me that he actually loved me, even though he was beating the crap out of me, you know? And so I walked out the door, and I'm walking to my little room. They give you a little room with a little cot. You know, there's like a little cross above the cot, you know, there's nothing else in there. There's like a bed and a cot that feeds you bread and water. And, you know, I'm walking there and I'm thinking my mind is going a million miles per hour. It's like a blaze. It's like a nuclear bomb went off there. You know, I every time I bump into somebody, I say, you know, that priest thing, he says, don't go in and see him. He's crazy. You know what I mean? Everybody go in there. He's crazy. He's crazy. You know what I mean? Something wrong with that guy, you know? And I walked in, you know, and I'm 7 years sober, and, you know, I'm doing step meetings, you know, and I'm, you know, I just wanted to get some help. I just wanted to get some relief. What was I doing? You're supposed to tell other people? You're supposed to catch them? What is that? You're full of shit? I mean, tell me a lot of things, but, you know, and I sit down on the bed, and I'm thinking in my mind's, you know how you ever have one of those deals where, you know, you're thinking about somebody who just really hurt you, and you're really confused and everything like that, and I'm going over it. He said this, and I said that, and he said this, and I said that, and you got 15,000 voices, and they're all about killing him and bad things about yourself, other people. I mean, you can't even think straight. You're trying to digest what the hell just happened in there, you know what I mean? What is this guy doing? What did he do? What did he say? Any alcoholic who has ever been put down or humiliated by somebody else, for no reason whatsoever, knows how it just blows your mind away. You can't go to sleep. You can't stop thinking about it. By the way, you know in step seven, you know how it says we get a new perspective? It says by 1,000 forms of humiliation and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. By humiliation and suffering. That's how alcoholics got it. By the way, do you remember how you got in here? You got here through humiliation. because you got dropped on your ass, because your life fell apart, because something bad happened to you. It was humiliating. That's how you got in here in the first place. Not because people were being nice to you. You know? But my mind's going a million miles per hour, and I'm sitting there on the bed, and I'm thinking about him. And all of a sudden, this thing goes across my brain. This thought goes across my brain. 7 years of Alcoholics Anonymous, 7 years of reading this book, this thought goes across my brain. You know what the thought was? You ready? Maybe he's right. That's a horrible thought. Man, I'll tell you, when you're fixing to hate somebody and you're justifying your actions and you're giving every reason in the world why you should shoot somebody and report him to the Pope, you know, and you're feeling sorry for yourself and you're feeling like such a victim and you're getting such a good feel sorry for yourself up and you're just getting ready to feel sorry for yourself and do all sorts of things and maybe not drink but just feeling like a real victim or really like your life is over, man, to have a thought go across your brain, maybe he's right, that's like the worst. That is like really, that's like somebody throwing cold water on that crap. And you know what the next thought was after maybe he's right? He is right. He's exactly right. And something that had been bothering me, a problem that had been bothering me for 6 months, went away like that. Gone. I'm telling you, something that I couldn't sleep, I couldn't eat, I kept on thinking about it, it went away like that. And from then on, for the rest of my life, I never had that problem again. And it had to do with my feelings about people and what they think about me and whether they're thinking bad thoughts about me. My inability to talk to people a certain way and how I thought about people went away like that. It was like instantaneously, my whole way I thought about life and people that used to cause me problems, not only in that specific situation, but in every other situation when I was dealing with people, went away like that. And you know what the guy said to me? He said, "You're full of shit." He said, "You're full of shit." Is that amazing? He knew, and he's the guy who said, "I'm not the guy." He was exactly the guy. He knew exactly what to say. The Lord gave him the words to say to me, to this arrogant, know-it-all attorney. The Lord gave him the words to say to me, the exact words he needed to say to me. And you know, when you're working with somebody and you're trying to help them and you're trying to carry the message, God's going to give you the words that's going to save somebody's life. And people are so worried about, you know, talking and what they're going to say, you know, and if you just turn it all over to him, what does it say? See what your relationship with him is right? Let no man say he needs his family back. Nonsense, job or no job. All you need, what you really need, it's not based on people. It's based upon relationship with God. You sense his power. As his power flows in, you lose fear of people. Today, tomorrow, the year after you're reborn. Man, that stuff starts cooking for you. You don't have to say to people when they say, "Do the meeting, I'm not ready." You don't even have to have a plan of what you're going to say. You know what I mean? Because you're just in the zone. You just tell the truth. You know what the truth is. It's not hidden. You can discern things. You can talk about what's going on in your life. Not only at AA meetings, not only up here like we're doing right now, in my law office, in court. Somebody once said to me, "Man, I'd like to see you in trial." You know what I mean? Why? You think it's any different than what I'm doing up here? Do you think you think I'm different? Different in the courtroom, different when I'm home with my wife, different when I'm out with the guys I sponsor, different when I'm out for lunch. You think this is the way I am now? That's the way it used to be. I'd be one way over here and I'd be another way over here. I'd be dependent upon what the crowd was. Because I was so worried about what will they like and what will he like and what will this one like. So worried about what you would think about me, I'd put on all these masks and try to figure out what's the right thing to say. It's so much easier just being yourself, isn't it? Because I just do myself so much better. I didn't know who the hell I was, and you don't know who you are. It's kind of difficult. But when you start learning who you are, it's so much easier to be yourself. You know, nobody makes a better me than me. I'm just so great at being me. You know what I mean? And the great thing about being me is not everybody likes me, but at least the people that don't like me, they don't like me. You know, at least they don't like me. You know what I mean? They used to not like me and I wasn't even being me. You know, I'd have to chase them down the hall and I'd say, you don't like me, but you don't understand me. That's not really me. I'm really different. You know what I mean? Now the people that don't like me, at least they don't like me. So they don't have to hang around me. But you want to tell the people that like me? They like me. You understand what I'm saying? Which is pretty cool. Which is a cool deal. Since I can do me without even thinking. Me is easy. You know what I'm talking about? The bottom line is this. All this stuff sort of comes together. You know, there's a lot of things I could read here, and I talk about a lot of other stuff, but the bottom line is part and parcel of bringing this, it's so, the action of sponsoring people, of helping people, of going up to people, even if you're scared, being scared is not an excuse. The action of doing that is one of the things that unlocks that deal, unlocks that power. You know, I'm not trying to put you down and make you feel, well, maybe I am trying to make you feel bad. You know, there's nothing wrong. Hey, listen, I used to say to my sponsor, I feel guilty. He says, maybe because you are guilty. You ever think of that? Maybe because you are guilty. You know what I mean? Whatever you do, don't make me feel guilty, you know? Well, the fact of the matter is, you know, I think it's a good idea when you read this book and you read the 12 steps and you see what they say and you see what Dr. Bob is doing and Bill Wilson. You know, if Bill Wilson, do you know that night when he was stuck in Akron, Ohio, or wherever he was, at the Mayflower Hotel, he didn't have any money in his pocket, maybe $10. There was no AA group. There was no KISS group. There was none of this stuff around. Do you realize that what he did, and he was all alone, and a few months sober, 6 months sober, what he did, he went to a telephone. He called up 10 pastors looking for somebody to help. And you remember, he called the first one, they say no. Second one, no. Third one, no. It may have been 9 or 10, but by the time he got to the ninth guy, she said, we got somebody. I'll put you in touch with Henrietta Fagerling, and he got to Dr. Bob. Do you realize he made like 9 or 10 phone calls, and they all said no, in a strange town with $10 in his pocket when he had nothing going for him, and he was only a few months sober, just so he could find another alcoholic to talk to, and as a result of his talking to that alcohol, AA started, and you're sober. That if he didn't do that, you'd all be drunk or dead or in jail, and he's sober because he did that. And he had a few months, and there was no AA, and there was no sponsor, and he was all alone in a strange town, and he picked up the phone to try to find somebody. And you're going to tell me you got 3 years, and you go to Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and you don't sponsor anybody because nobody's asking you? And you're going to tell me that you think you're thoroughly doing this thing like they were? That you're painstaking about this? I mean, are you serious? And you think you deserve to get and have what they had with the crap you're doing? With that crap? Really? Come on. Get serious about this thing. Thank you very much. Yeah.